Chapter 4, Voyage into the Unknown. The small group standing against the rail in the stern of the SS Oceania strained to get a last glimpse of friends on the dockside. The ship had been underway for some minutes and was rapidly gathering speed, yet they could faintly hear the words of the familiar hymn as it was carried over the water to them, "God be with you till we meet again." It was just past noon on Saturday, October 17, 1891, when the ship weighed anchor. Before this time, a number of friends had come on board to say goodbye to the two young doctors, Edith Brown and Ellen Ferrer, who were going out to India to begin their pioneering medical work. They were the first women doctors to be sent out by their board. A luncheon had been served in the ship's dining room. Then, all too soon, came the call, "All friends on shore!" Edith recalled the various people who had come. Miss Butler, Miss Harris, Miss Saville, Miss Wallace, and Lady Congleton. Miss Greenfield and Miss Pogson, who would later be working with her in India. The family members were Lucy, Carrie, Maud, Louis, Fred, Robert, and Harold. Her great regret was that her mother and her sister Mabel could not be present. However, Miss Butler kindly remained on board ship as far as Tilbury, where it would stop for about 2 minutes, and took ashore a last letter for her mother. The initial parting was difficult, and personal contact was cherished until the last possible moment. The difficulty of parting and the mental tears shed caused her to write, "Thank God for that verse, 'He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him.'" The two girls were joined by their third traveling companion, Miss Ganga, an Indian worker under the Baptist Zenana Mission. She was going to Delhi. Going down to the cabin, the women were struck once again by how cheerful it looked, strewn with the farewell remembrances of a lot of well-wishers. There were a number of bouquets of flowers, several baskets of fruit, books for reading on the long trip, several newspapers, and a lot of cards carrying greetings and prayers from those who could not come to the boat for a personal farewell. This physical evidence of thoughtfulness on the part of so many people was most reassuring to Edith. She felt that surely these and many others would remember to undergird her and her work in constant prayer. The sea journey was a time of physical and spiritual challenge. The second day out from London, Dr. Brown found that she was a poor sailor. She recorded the fact in her journal. "After tea, it began to get rough, and I had, alas, to go to bed instead of reading and writing. I struggled up for a short time on Sunday evening and lay on the deck, but Monday was so rough I did not attempt it. Our cabins are very low down. The porthole is only above the water when quite smooth, so we have not yet been able to have it open. Also, it has been newly painted, so you can imagine how we dread going down. I have not been ill, however, when lying down, only when trying to move, but I have felt too dizzy to read at all until this afternoon." Seasickness was to plague her continuously throughout the voyage, but temporary physical distress did not deprive her of the beauty afforded in such a trip. The very first night, the impact of sea beauty was brought home to her. "We had a most glorious sunset, though it looked stormy. While the lovely after colors lingered in the west at the opposite end of the ship, all was very dark, when suddenly there was a little three-cornered rift in the clouds from which a glorious golden light streamed out. The rift gradually increased until the full golden moon shone out in all its splendor. The waters looked lovely, and I hardly knew which side of the ship to stand at." The ports of call were a continual source of pleasure as various landmarks and sites were discovered and recognized, but even greater was the thrill of the unknown and unanticipated. Her description of Gibraltar caught some of this eagerness to all that was new. "At first sight, the island looks very bare and rugged. The rocks are mostly white, and the houses of the same color or pale yellow or green. The streets are narrow, and the houses high, and the roofs are mostly of a rich brown color. Most of the people are in English dress, but there are some in Moorish costume, some in white, and others in rich reds or magentas. They have large turbans and a chain of handsome beads from their neck to their waistband. The loose robe comes to the ankle, and the feet seem to be either bare or with silk stockings and sandal slippers. The carriages are like in England pictures of 50 years ago, mostly bright painted with four posts, with awnings and curtains, and drawn by mules. The Southport Gate, by which we went in, is curious. It is double, one half being the ancient Moorish gate, renovated, with old carvings, the cleverest being that of a fleece suspended. The other half is quite modern and dated 1885. The market was pretty, with grapes at 6 pounds in a basket for 1 shilling. Fresh figs and pomegranates were abundant. The gardens were surprising on such a bare spot. Palms, rose trees, bushes of heliotrope, melons growing as creepers on other trees, pepper trees, and many magnificent flowers I did not know. Other ports brought forth a descriptive flow from the eager visitor. In Marseille, it was a visit to the ancient church of Notre Dame de la Garde, surmounted by its huge figure of the Virgin Mary. This was followed by a visit to the Church of St. Peter and a descent into some very ancient catacombs, which she found extremely interesting. At Port Said, the world looked strange and different. Arabs in bright colored garments, Turks crowded on deck and on shore. Some did conjuring tricks, others sold all kinds of curiosities, fruit, sweets, bangles, and photos. The visitors found it interesting to listen to the bargaining. Perhaps the most unusual sight at Port Said is the refueling of the ship. They had been told that about 1,000 tons of coal would be taken on board in the course of the day. The whole operation fascinated Edith Brown. The ship was very uncomfortable all day, as everything on deck was covered with coal dust, and downstairs the portholes had to be closed on account of thieves being about. The coaling was interesting. A continuous stream of men, in Arab costume but so black that no color could be seen, went up a ladder from a coal barge at the side of the ship up onto the deck, each with a basket of coal on his shoulder. They went down another ladder, and we could only see them through a cloud of coal dust. Then those whose work was over were rowed back to the shore, one standing up in the prow, and in the early morning light they looked so like the old pictures of spirits being taken across the River Styx. It was a time of excitement for the young women as the ship glided through the Red Sea, and at a distance they could see various landmarks identified with the Bible. It was refreshing to see some green palm trees. We saw Moses' Well in the distance. It was a distinct patch of green, 2 miles or so from the shore. Elam was pointed out to us, and the range of hills to which Sinai belongs, but we could not be certain we saw the mountain itself. We have had several locusts on board, a quail and a flying fish. It has been so interesting to read in Acts and in Exodus about the places we are passing. These neophyte missionaries found that they were drawn into a closer fellowship with one another because of their felt need for spiritual fellowship and growth. Each morning, a number of them met together for Bible studies in 1 John and the Gospel of John. The day the ship sailed within sight of the coasts of Corsica and Sardinia, Edith Brown wrote, "We have been going over Acts 27 this morning and tracing out Paul's journey through these regions. Yesterday, after we passed through the Straits of Messina, the view was very nice. We saw Stromboli smoking gently and Etna in the distance." In October 28, 1891, she wrote, "Yesterday we had a short prayer meeting in our cabin after dinner. Miss Clay, Miss Hoare, and Miss Morris of Bombay joined us, and we hope to have it every day. We had hymns from 6 until nearly 6:30 before tea, and several came down to listen, while stewards were looking in at the portholes of the saloon. The baker on board was converted through a Miss Kerr going out 4 years ago, and he says there is only one other Christian man among the ship's men. Our cabin steward seems interested. The growth in fellowship is mentioned several times. I like my future fellow workers more and more. We have such happy times over our Bibles. Miss Fox, Miss Ganga, and Miss Bate all enter so fully into the spiritual teaching. We are quite looking forward to being together in Delhi. Miss Clay, too, is a great help and is very nice, and we all get on so well together. It is good of the Lord to give us such happy fellowship. We take it in turns to say a few words at our afternoon prayer meeting, and then we have many short and earnest prayers, especially remembering any individuals who have been spoken to during the day. The full extent of this spiritual activity was listed for November 1, 1891. We went to early service at 8 o'clock this morning. After breakfast, had our Bible reading. Then at 10:45, went to the morning service in the first class saloon. The sermons are very unsatisfactory as the bishop talks so much about the church and so little about Christ. In the afternoon, we made a good many copies of hymns for singing in the evening. I wrote a note to the captain to ask if we might have hymns, etc., for the stewards in the evening, and he was quite pleased. At 5 o'clock, there was a short service in the second-class saloon, and after tea, we sang hymns to the stewards. They liked it and seemed interested and willing to talk. One of the passengers, who has never been to a Christian service and does not possess a Bible, comes now to our Bible readings. An Indian Rani has asked to join us in our private prayer meeting. She belongs to the Mildmay Association and is often in the Punjab. Although deeply involved in their own special spiritual exercises and projects, the missionaries did not ignore the more formal religious activities of the ship, but at times they found a humorous note in the proceedings. An amusing incident happened on Sunday. The clergyman retired in the middle of the service to robe himself properly for the delivery of the sermon, according to high church tradition. When he came back, his congregation had all disappeared, thinking the service was over. On another occasion, when they were having their Bible study on deck, the clergyman came along and inquired if they were studying the lesson for the day. Miss Clark responded that they were studying their lesson for the day and confessed that they did not even know what was the prescribed lesson for that day. They invited the minister to return and read it with them after breakfast. They had quite a nice time with him studying Luke 15. However, wrote Miss Brown, we did not agree on all points, but most of it was helpful. The beauty of the moon shining on the Indian Ocean was relished to the full as the young women made their way on deck to sleep each night. As the ship passed from the Red Sea into the Indian Ocean, the cabins had become unbearably stuffy from the intense heat. On deck, they could lie and watch the motion of the ship's mast as it moved among the stars in the heavens, like a great pointer rolling from side to side. The breeze was delightfully warm, and the stars looked down as familiar, well-remembered friends. On Sunday, November 9, 1891, the sleepers on the deck woke about 5 a.m. Someone nearby was exclaiming about the flashing of a lighthouse, the Bombay Light. This was the traveler's first visual contact with India. Everyone scrambled for the cabins to get dressed and back on deck, lest some of the approaching sights be missed. From the deck, they watched the ragged hills of the outlying islands loom up through the gray mists of early dawn. Then they were maneuvering into the mouth of Bombay Harbor. By 7:30, the ship had berthed and the passengers began to disembark. For Edith Brown, the long journey had been completed, the journey from one life to another.